Hello, everybody. Welcome to TRC Unleashed.
Another good punter for Georgia stands at his 15. Boots one back to Ace Sanders. Slides over to the near sideline. Ace drops one. Picks it up at the 30. 35. Ace with a move up the middle. Another at the 50. Open space for Ace. He can't get him at the 30. At the 20. Got one man to beat. 10-5. Touchdown, Carolina. Touchdown, Ace Sanders. Boom!
Todd, no flags, folks. No flags.
Ace Sanders just went the distance at Williams-Brice. The extra point could make it 21-0 Carolina. Oh, hurt me.
Gamecock Nation, this is Buck with the RubberChickensBlog.com, and welcome to TRC Unleashed, episode number 32. I am joined today, as always, by T-Bone and the G-Man. Wherever and whenever you are listening, we thank you and hope you enjoy the show. And guys, what a week. Last week, about this time, we were talking about what an important game we were facing and how it just might be the biggest game ever played at Williams-Brice Stadium. I'm not sure a South Carolina team has ever faced a challenge quite like this and come through in such a big way with a 35-7 thrashing of Georgia. I can't think of many more satisfying games and subsequent satisfying days that I've had, you know, during a South Carolina football season. But let's talk a little bit about the game. I think there was more pressure on this team and on this game than the 2010 Alabama, and that's kind of what everybody's been referring to. Well, we beat the number one team in the country. They had a however many 18-game winning streak or something like that, because we had already lost to Auburn that year. So there maybe wasn't quite as much pressure. This was, in a way, an elimination game for us, knowing that Georgia has a fairly easy road once they get past us. They've really got to beat Florida, and that's it. Game day was in town. It was just a gorgeous day. I had the privilege of watching this game on a 100-inch high-def screen myself. I couldn't be at the game, but, man, it was kind of like I was sitting there because the crowd looked great on TV. They were loud and going out of their minds from the very beginning of the game, and we just laid the wood to Georgia from the opening kickoff, and our man G-Man was there. We'll get to some actual game details in a minute, but you were pretty much there all day. Give us your impressions of this particular game day.
Well, it was pretty intense. I got reports from some. I didn't get down to the tailgate area until around 2:30 or so, but I had reports. I saw reports of people filling up down there as early as 10 o'clock in the morning. I mean, you had people down there all day. It was just an extra something in the air. It was just a lot of excitement. Of course, there were a lot of Georgia fans there who surprisingly weren't talking as much pregame smack as usual, which I did take note of and surprised me a little bit. But it was in the air. It was palpable. I mean, you could tell it was a big game. There was a lot of festivities going on, tons of people, lots of traffic, lots of people looking for tickets. Just a special atmosphere for the game. When you're ready, we'll talk a little bit about in the stadium, but I mean, that's just kind of what I felt. You know, there's a lot of excitement around game day. I didn't go down to the horseshoe, but I did watch it, and it was obviously a very raucous time out there as well. You know, Darius Rucker was on stage, and if I don't know if you guys saw it, but he called it.
He said he did.
I'm gonna dominate this game.
Yeah, he did.
And he said that last eight times Georgia had been to Williams-Brice, they had scored less than 20 points. And I remember hearing that and going, wow, yeah, I don't think that's gonna happen this time. And then he said, we're gonna dominate. And they were like, a couple guys were like, what, really? And he was confident. So, you know, he nailed it.
Yeah, Darius Darius called it. Did you actually hook up with Darius since you had his tickets and his parking passes or whatever?
No, I actually handed them off to the ultimate recipient. They were just in my hands for a brief period of time, but no hookup with any celebrities, anything like that. I was merely a errand boy in that whole deal.
Well, I mean, we want to drop names if we have the opportunity.
Yeah.
And Darius is a friend of the whole endeavor here. We've had many a run in with a couple
to run in,
blowfish.
a couple of drive-bys,
right?
But I did have the opportunity to be the errand boy on his tickets and debit card for a friend, but nothing. No,
did
no,
you save the debit card number?
I did not.
I was going to ask you to give that out now.
Well, if you've got a friend of a friend of a friend, maybe you could see about getting him on the show one day. Maybe he'd be willing to come on with us. But
that is a good idea. I will actually work on that.
Maybe he could play a song. He could do a custom intro for us or something, so I could stop breaking the law by using all of this iTunes music to start the show and end the show. But so anyway, we're just getting way off track here. T-Bone, the game gets going, and we, as always, take the opening kickoff. And there just aren't many coaches in the country that will, if they win the coin toss, they take the ball. If they lose the coin toss, the other coach usually defers, and we know Spurrier always takes the ball. I think maybe there are two or three times maybe in his career at South Carolina where he hasn't taken the ball. And we used to always complain about, man, why are we taking the ball? And you can just remember so many three-and-out disasters when we take the ball. But second play, we hit a long ball to Demir Byrd. We go five plays for a touchdown. Georgia has a long kickoff return. Then we get the Devontae Holloman interception, seven plays for a touchdown, I think it was. And then it's kind of a blur until the A. Sanders punt return, and then we're up, boom, 21-0 with about 5 minutes left to go in the first quarter. And you sent us a text that said, you know, things and bodies were just flying all over your household at that point. So, you know, describe the scene to us there.
Well, what you've got is a couple of big-time Gamecock fans who are in the teen to preteen years, very engaged. One of them, unprompted this year, spent his allowance money by buying all of the preseason publications, including Phil Steele's magazine, to give you an idea of how committed these two boys are to the college football world. And you have me, who's obviously something of a fan, considering that I'm on a Tuesday evening filming recording a podcast about the game. But then in the room was the fairest of the four of us, the smartest, the prettiest, the coolest, the hippest, the best dancer, all those things. But she is also a Georgia grad.
Oh, you're talking about your wife.
I thought pregame smack talk.
Yeah.
And then as things began to unravel, it was pandemonium. I swear it was like a scene from The Hangover. At one point, there were things flying everywhere. Animals were coming in and out of the room. It was incredible.
Yeah. So how did K-Bone take the whole thing? Did she eventually just leave the room, or was she a good sport about it?
No, she stayed until the bitter end and watched it all. Her frustration was not the loss, because, and she said this, she would tell you the same thing now if she wasn't pretending that I wasn't in here doing this. She was frustrated with how they were losing, and particularly their inability to run the ball at all. Anytime they would hand off to one of these backs and we would just stuff them, she was like, you know, this is inexcusable. Very frustrated with their inability to get to the edge or show any strength up the gut.
You mean Gershel?
Gershel.
Yeah, Gershel. Gershel.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah, that was her first exposure to Gershel, and she came away unimpressed.
Yeah, I was pretty unimpressed too. I mean, I watched these guys, and you know, I've seen a little bit of Georgia play, and all I heard about in their preseason scrimmages, you know, one of these two guys would rip off about an 80-yard run at every scrimmage and how impressive they are. And then all these teams that they played, they were both, you know, they were rushing for 100 yards and they became Gershel. And, you know, I was concerned, but they just had nowhere to run against that Gamecock defense.
I'll say that Marshall of the Gershel twins or whatever they are, Marshall, you know, he's a year or two away. He's just not physically there, I don't think. He's a fast little guy. But, I mean, you know, the couple times he got the ball, he did not look like he was interested in doing anything with it.
Yeah.
Well, and Gurley can move. Gurley's got size. He's physically ready, but he didn't appear to be mentally ready.
It was the defense, guys.
Yeah,
The defense. I mean, so many times the guys didn't have the ability to breathe, let alone get going. I mean, those are quality backs there. And those guys are going to be good for a long time. But when you don't have any room to run, I mean, that's just what happened to them. I mean, but can I talk a little bit about the game day atmosphere for a second?
Man, you can talk about whatever you want to.
All right. I saw somebody, and it was it wasn't a fan. It was from one of the Gamecock sites. And I can't remember which one it was. But somebody talked about it, and this will be near and dear to your heart, Buck. Because we were there together, and it was quite some time ago. Somebody said that the atmosphere was equal to the greatest atmosphere they had ever experienced at a Gamecock game, and that was the 1987 USC Clemson game.
Right.
And I thought about that. Then I thought about the ace punt return, and the only other time that I remember being in such a state of frenzy on a big play was the Ryan Bethea,
right,
where I ended up face down
in between the bleachers,
yelling up at people asking if he scored. Okay?
Right.
But when Ace took the punt back, people were like flying through the stands. I mean, literally falling into the aisle. I mean, it was absolute pandemonium.
It's madness.
When he took that ball back, I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, that was one of the highlights. I mean, it was, and T-Bone, I'll throw one out to you as well. The fade. You and I were together for the fade.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that was a big moment. But this was some kind of moment. I'll tell you what. I mean, the sandstorm, the towels. The place was rocking and it was shaking. And I heard somebody today talking about some of the outtakes from ESPN that didn't make it on. And they said there's some snippets that have made it out there. And there's a time where Herb Street's talking to somebody. He goes, "Do you feel that? Do you feel that?
Right.
This place is moving." So anyway, it was incredible in that place. It really was.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, it played really well on TV. I mean, it looked awesome. And like I said, you know, congratulations and thank you to everybody at USC that had a hand in putting that whole day together, because it was first class. I mean,
the only hiccup would be that the Beast Board
went down.
Beast board went down, and I saw a hilarious photo of the Beast Board.
You had one job.
The big yes, you had one job.
That was great. So, you know, I don't even know where to start when talking about the game itself and the players. You know, on offense, what do? We ran the ball, 54, 56 times and only passed it 10?
It's incredible. Incredible.
And of the 10 completions, six completions on the 10 passes for 162 yards, I believe it was. And, you know, I've seen something this year out of the Gamecock offense that I can't remember seeing in a long, long time. And every game on two or three plays, we have a receiver getting behind the defense. I mean, consistently, we are, you know, game after game, Demir Bird and then, you know, D.L. Moore, of all people. He was 5 yards behind those guys and just had to slow up and make the catch. Bird was 5 yards behind Rambo and had to slow up and make his catch. But even with Alshon was a jump ball guy. I mean, he always had somebody hanging on him when he made a catch. He was never behind the defense. So it's nice to see, you know, you know, their safeties appear to be coming up to support the run or maybe to cover our tight ends or whatever, and we're getting guys deep. I mean, have y'all noticed that? It seems like we're getting wide receivers deeper than we ever have behind the defense.
I think so, and I think it's the threat of the run. I think you got people coming up to stop Lattimore and Shaw. So,
yeah,
that's
Bird can
exactly
just fly.
What it is, and it actually a part of the game from Saturday that not a lot of people have talked about is how similar our defensive philosophies were in that game. They started out playing our guys man, and they had their safeties walking up to try to stop the run, and we actually did the same thing. The difference was our corners and our, you know, our dime back or our nickel back or whatever, they were able to man up on those Georgia receivers. I mean, how many times do you see us tip a ball away at the last second or something?
Yeah.
And that, you know, that contributed to the way we were able to shut down Gershel because, you know, we were able to leave him out there. We went to zone more and more as the game went on. But you know, I think Georgia was doing that to us, and our guys were burning them. The only thing that's kind of a slight concern there is, you know, we don't hit the guy in stride. Granted, if it's for 60 yards, it's hard to complain. But
Please on that. Come on. But can I make one editorial comment? No more references to Gershel.
Not until they win the co-Heisman.
Do we need to get a second? Is there a vote coming here?
Yeah, or? No more Gershel. Okay.
The motion passes by acclamation.
Yeah, they had, 26 carries for 75 yards, I think it was, and Gurley got 15 yards on his first carry.
Right.
So, you know, somebody do the math for me. That makes it 61 yards on 25 carries. So it just a dominating performance. The defense, you got to start talking about the defense with Jadeveon Clowney was, you know, everything you would ever want to see on a Saturday night ESPN game. He was just leaping over people. He was running through people, around people, and Aaron Murray was just terrorized the entire game. It just looked like about midway through the second quarter that none of the Georgia players really wanted to be there. I mean, they were just outmanned, outclassed. You just don't expect a South Carolina team to look that much better than a Georgia team, but they did it. And I brought this up. We'll talk about some of the other defenders. You guys haven't really said much about this. You know, we've all thought that if there's a Heisman Trophy candidate on the team, it's probably Marcus Lattimore with the freshman year that he had, a great start to the year last year. A lot of people consider him the best running back in the country. But the problem is he's not going to win the Heisman because he's not putting up these video game numbers. You know, I don't even think – what is he averaging, about 90 yards a game now,
something like that?
He's not going to win the Heisman. He's going to have to rip off about 3 or 4 200-yard games, you know, the rest of the season to even get into the conversation as long as what's the guy's name for West Virginia? Geno Smith. As long as Geno Smith's doing what he's doing. But I'm telling you, the way Clowney is playing, and it probably won't happen. I mean, you know he's not going to win the Heisman, but people need to – you know, look at this guy, what he's doing, the impact he's having on the game, and say, you know what, that's one of the top 4 or 5 football players in the country, and invite him to New York for the ceremony. I mean, it's time to break through this, looking at the stats, looking at the best player on the best team, you know, offensively. The Downtown Athletic Club has got to do something. There's got to be some kind of movement to get a guy like Jadeveon Clowney into New York for this ceremony.
There's a simple answer to that. I mean, if we end up winning the SEC, we don't have to win a national championship. Let's not talk about that. If we win the SEC, either 21 or 7 will be in New York.
Okay.
I mean, I don't see how they couldn't be.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I just don't see how.
Well, I hope that's true. I hope you're right. But I'm kind of tired of this, you know, this thought that the Heisman is given to the best college football player every year, because it's just not. It's given to the guy on the best team with the best stats.
And you see how I preface that. We've got to win to make it happen. It's not like when Big George won it, where we went, 8-4 and he won the Heisman?
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, the Heisman has completely changed in the last 15 years or so into something totally different than it used to be. So,
yeah,
I mean, I don't really put much stock in the Heisman anymore.
Yeah.
Like I used to.
No, I don't think so. But there's so much hype around it.
The G-Man says that now that his last glimmer of hope of winning the trophy has gone away. So, you know, big, you know.
Right. So, you know, elsewhere on the defense, I thought the DBs were great. I thought, you know, except for that one play Victor Hampton gave up down the sidelines on that third down, he played great. Jimmy Legree had a fantastic knockdown of a long ball. Linebackers were tough. And Georgia, we gave up, 224 yards, which is the least amount of yardage we've given up all season. You know, East Carolina, Alabama, Birmingham, Missouri, Vandy, they all picked up more yards than Georgia did. So, G-Man, comments on the defense. Anybody stand out to you?
I thought of all the guys you mentioned, Shaq had a good game, but I thought Holloman was just huge. He was so active. You know, early in the year, people were like, what's wrong with Holloman? He's not making many plays. Well, he is making plays. I mean, it certainly is now. And I think we awarded him a rubber chicken last week for the Kentucky game, if I'm not mistaken. But he was really big. I mean, from the very beginning, I mean, he tackled Mitchell for a loss in a game play at end around, and then he picks the ball, and he was in on a lot of other big plays too. He just looks very active to me now, more so than he was beginning of the year. I think he's acclimating himself to that position and is really starting to turn into a playmaker.
You're right. He almost, additionally, he was the guy that almost had the pick six.
Correct.
Georgia started trying to throw those outs, and it was obvious that they don't do that a lot, but it was what they were reduced to.
And those little screen passes were a direct result of number seven.
Exactly. Get the ball out quick. And they didn't have a slant game, apparently, because that's all they went to. But on 21 on defense, that's my favorite defensive play of the year, is the tip by 99 or – it was 99.
Yep.
The tip by Quarles. And then everyone else looks up, and – Holloman looks like he is fired out of a cannon at that ball.
Yeah.
Everyone else is still looking up, and he's like, pew, through there and catches the thing.
Yeah.
It was incredible, incredible play.
And let me say this, too. I was reading, and you guys may have seen this, but somebody was evaluating the top three pro prospects on each team pre-game, this couple of days before the game. And obviously, the top two on the Gamecock team were Lattimore and Clowney. But number three, whoever this guy was Holloman.
Yeah, I saw that.
And so, I mean, the guy looks to me like he has turned it on the last couple of games. I mean, really turned it on, and I think that's a huge plus for us down the stretch.
Yeah, he has turned into the player we all expected him to be when he came to school here, and he's just progressively gotten better and better, and yeah, he's playing great. Any final thoughts on the game, the atmosphere? Oh, you know what? I wanted to say, and G-Man, I don't know if you've watched any replays of the game. I've never really been a big fan of Musburger and Herb Street, but I guess when they're just showering you with so much, or your team with so much love and adulation, that, man, they were great. I thought they were great on Saturday night.
Yeah, well,
I never thought I'd say that about Brent Musburger.
I've always been down on Mushburger, as I call him, but I thought that he did a great job too.
Yeah.
I like Herb Street. I think he does a good, even job. But I have watched the tape, and they, of course, what can you say? I mean, it was a great atmosphere, a dominating performance. I mean, of course they're going to sound good in that atmosphere.
We would have loved Tim McCarver calling that game.
So. I don't know.
Gordon Solie.
I got one more comment on the defense and number seven and what happened and all that. I think the game may have been won before it was even played. Did y'all hear that Aaron Murray admitted to not being able to sleep because he was worried about Clowney?
Yeah.
Musburger talked about that.
Right.
I'm like, okay. It was obvious midway through that game that he is trying to figure out what to do. You know? How do I get away from this guy? He was worried about him before he even started.
Yeah. He took a glance over to Clowney's side on a lot of plays. You know, when the pass may have been going to the opposite side of the field, he kind of peeked over there. He was terrified. So let's do some rubber chicken awards for the Georgia game, and I'm going to start because I'm going to take a guy that I know neither one of you are going to pick, or at least I think you're not. We seem to try to outdo each other with wild picks, so I'll go first this week.
Don't take my guy because I got an unusual
one. I've got a perfect one.
I'm going with Damir Bird. Damir Bird saved his third touchdown on a kickoff return. There are three times this year where a kickoff returner has gotten loose and Damir Bird has run him down, and he did it again against Georgia on Saturday night against Malcolm Mitchell, who is not a slow dude by any stretch of the imagination. And Bird just ran up behind him, grabbed his jersey, and then wrapped him up and brought him down. Then he had the great catch, which set the tone for the offense at the beginning of the game. So, G-Man, judging by your reaction, it sounds like that's the guy you were going to pick.
I was going to take Bird because, and I'll pick somebody else, but just to kind of end that, I think the takeaway on the long pass, that was a pivotal play because Rambo had the ball in his hands. Mm-hmm. If you watched the replay.
Oh yeah.
You can tell from where I was in the stadium, but he had a ball in his hands. He picks that ball. I mean, you know, who knows what happens.
Right.
And I did see a quote today. It was on one of the websites where they label the position that Damir plays on a kickoff return team is called the vice position, whatever that means. But Robinson said that he's the best vice player he's ever had. That must be the guy who tackles the guy when everybody else misses him.
Right.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you could make a case of how different this year would be if he weren't, you know, if he hadn't made those three plays.
Right. He's truly come into his own. But you think about the touchdown catch last week, the catch in this game, those plays. I mean, the guy is he's living up to the hype, which he got a lot of when we signed him. But he's living up to it. Am I next?
Do you need time to think? Because I could piggyback on those thoughts for a couple of minutes.
Go ahead.
Okay. First thing is about Rambo. Granted, my sample size on Bakari Rambo is basically the three times we've played him in a few minutes of the SEC championship game. What is the big deal with this guy? Why does he get all these All-American honors? All I've ever seen him do is get knocked on his rear end and get beat deep. That's all I've seen, you know, for three straight years. So I just don't get the Rambo fascination. Maybe he's showing out against, you know, New Mexico State or something. But
yeah, he had a big game against New Mexico State last year. So
he did.
That's probably it.
I don't know. But, you know, that to the side, as far as Damir Bird goes and as far as my pick for the Rubber Chickens this week goes is – the physicality, the wanting the freaking football, the willingness to go up there and fight for it and bring it down is something that I've critiqued our wide receivers on for a couple of years now. But Jason freaking Barnes gets my rubber chicken this week because he manned up and caught that ball. And I think I'm going to have to start calling him D.L. Moore. I think I'm going to have to give in and stop calling him Jason Barnes. And I'm going to give my rubber chicken to D.L. Moore.
Good pick. All right, G-Man, are you going to go with something obvious, or you've been digging deep in the bag of tricks?
Well, you know, I'm sort of at a loss here. I mean, last week I picked the entire defensive line, I believe.
Just pick the whole team now.
We've showered so much praise on Clowney already. I think he just transcends the award. So I think I'm going to go with Ace Sanders. He may have gotten one already this year, but I'm giving it to him on the sheer excitement of that punt return and the fact that I think that was the knockout blow. I believe when he crossed the goal line, I believe that was like we had been hitting him with a couple body shots, and you know they were kind of in the corner with their hands up, protecting their face. But Ace comes in. That was a knockout blow. Once he scored, I mean. While I was still nervous, and you guys know I'm nervous till the clock says 0-0-0, but looking back on it, it was done at that point. That was it. I mean, the air went out of the balloon, and their players just looked deflated. So I'm going to give it to Ace for that big return and the sheer excitement that was in the stadium when that was going down.
All right. Three rubber chicken awards and three wide receivers.
Wow.
That's a first. And I tell you what, if Jadeveon Clowney can't win a rubber chicken award, there's no way he's going to get the Heisman.
There's kind of a dark side to a rubber chicken award that I don't know that we're going to get. Yeah, a couple more thoughts before we move on from this game, because there's so many moments. And I would like for y'all to give me kind of your favorite moments from the game, like if I could hijack the call here. One of my favorite moments was the goal line stand when they threw the little pass into the corner and Swearinger knocked it down. Not Swearinger, Victor Hampton knocked it down. And then you saw another one of our corners run over to him and do the feed me motion. You know, right. Like, yeah, eating.
Right.
And you could tell that Hampton was still pissed about that back shoulder pass that he got burned on.
Yeah, I thought that,
because he would not do it. And then finally he gave a kind of half-hearted, feed me.
Yeah, he had a look on his face like he was still kind of pissed about
right,
that
get
previous
out of here
play.
With that. And the other, my other favorite play was, I guess, the next play, or there may have been a play intervening, but when Shaq and Swearinger stuffed that pass at the goal line, that's when I knew. I think that was the backbreaker.
Yeah.
Because they came away there without any points. That was a 14-point swing and felt huge to me.
Yeah, you know, a couple of things come to mind for me. Number one is, any play where Jadeveon Clowney left his feet was just, just got me out of my seat whenever with the people I was, I'd say, did you see that? Did you? No. And, they're not, most of the people I was watching the game with aren't as big a football fan and I'm just like, no, you don't understand. You're not even supposed to leave your feet when you're playing football. And he's jumping over people. You don't understand. And so that was a lot of fun to watch. And then Shaw's last touchdown to make it 35-0 was just one of those things where it's like, we're toying with you guys. We're going to run the read option. We've been running inside, and now I'm just going to – there was nobody around Shaw, and he just kind of half-heartedly dove into the end zone, and it was just kind of like
– Elliott's reaction to
Elliott's reaction, boom! And then he dropped a MF bomb, I think, as they were going to commercial.
I saw that.
And, so those were a couple of mine. G, you still thinking? Anything, Stan?
You asking me for a moment? I'm sorry. I thought maybe my ace moment had sort of led that off.
I thought you were going to talk about the dancing that went on afterwards.
Right.
That was good. But as far as big moments, you guys have pretty much stolen them. I mean, the goal line stand was huge. I tell you, the first touchdown pass was pretty special too. I mean, it's a great play call if you think about, he had the action going one way, but with the play action fake and then Bruce running behind. That was a ball play right there. That was an old ball coach ball play.
It doesn't, every time Bruce scores, don't y'all kind of feel like it's a reaffirmation of the head ball coach knows what he's doing and screw you, Ron Morris? Because I kind of feel those emotions all at once whenever Bruce does something good.
Or anytime Connor Shaw completes a pass.
Right. There you
exactly,
go.
Exactly.
All right. So, that's 30 minutes on the Georgia game, which it deserved at least 30 minutes. That was a huge win. We debated last week, biggest game in school history, biggest SEC game, biggest game at Williams-Brice, whatever. And T-Bone, I think you may have said it. It's like, well, it's the biggest game ever if we win.
Then next
week will be the biggest game ever. And then if we win that, the week after will be the biggest game ever. So we head to Baton Rouge next week. And something I've found out today that I did not realize, LSU's schedule is pretty brutal. I think it's worse than ours, because counting the Florida game that they just lost, their five consecutive opponents are currently 25-1.
Ouch.
Florida's undefeated, South Carolina, Alabama, Mississippi State undefeated. Texas A&M's got one loss. 25-1 they're going up against. So, that's a tough schedule right there. They've got quite the gauntlet to run themselves to try to get back to the SEC championship. So, so it's hard to say. Maybe this is the biggest game ever if we win. The good news is if we lose in Baton Rouge, that really doesn't damage us too much as far as the East goes, because we still got to turn around and beat Florida. But LSU, ton of talent, bruising running game, Barkevious Mingo and our good friend Sam Montgomery at defensive end. What if Sam Montgomery was a Gamecock? What that would be a professional defensive line we would have.
What would he start for us?
Right, he'd be coming off the bench. What a rabbit formation that would be. But LSU, Zach Mettenberger's been pretty disappointing. I think LSU fans were thinking he was going to be the savior of the offense. He shaved the mustache. Jeez. Now, you know, word came out today that maybe Akeem Augusti and Byron Girardeau are going to, you know, it's possible that they could miss the game with sprained ankles, which would just be, you know, what a kick in the pants for Akeem Augusti finally getting out, getting some playing time, and then having something like that happen. But, G-Man, what do you think about the LSU game? How do you feel?
You know, if we have to play them, which we do, we're playing them under the best possible circumstances. They are struggling offensively. They had a major injury, middle linebacker. They lost a couple of offensive linemen. I mean, I keep hoping and thinking that we're catching them at the right time. But we know the power and the depth of that program and the just tremendous offensive and defensive line talent that they have. You know, I see it as a slugfest, and I see it as a game in the teens. And I'm hoping and praying that we can come out on top. And I'm going to say, I was thinking about this today, anticipating the podcast. I'm going to say that we get a couple touchdowns on one-yard plunges, maybe one of which is set up by a turnover in LSU territory, and we kick a field goal and win the game 17-13 is what I'm going to predict. But I think it's going to be very ugly. I'm predicting neither team goes over 300 yards in total offense. And we have to protect the football or else we will lose.
T-Bone?
Well, I was with the G-Man all the way through that analysis. Think that that's prophetic, and we will see that play out up and until the point he said we kick a field goal to win, which
17-13. I said 17-13.
Okay. I have no confidence in us kicking a field goal when it matters. we just haven't – we hadn't run that drill that often, you know. But I do – feel kind of a 14-10 kind of game coming on, or some kind of odd score, you know, like a 19-12 score or something like that. But I really am concerned about maybe the special teams being too important in this game. Hopefully I'll be wrong there. You know, I keep thinking back to what Spurrier said about the Georgia game. He said we were up 21-0. And he said, "I just couldn't imagine them scoring 21 points on us." And yeah. He kind of went into a shell with the play calling and everything else. And that's very different for what we think of when we think of Spurrier playing, you know, calling ball plays. But I think he may approach this game the same way. I think we may try to pound and play defense. So I don't know. In a weird way, I like our chances. I think they've won 20 straight home games, so I don't know why. Maybe it'll work out. I think you said 17-13. I'm going to pick 19-12 just to be different.
Well, I'm going to go with LSU's going to win this one 23-10.
Ouch.
I think it's a complete letdown for us. You know, we've hit the pinnacle of the mountain, and we're just going to come tumbling down the other side. So
you and this opposite thing, you won't let go of it, will you?
I'm absolutely not. I'm very superstitious, and which leads me to the next topic is another reason we're going to lose is these ridiculous uniforms we're going to wear on Saturday night. Now look, listen, Gamecock Nation, I understand that it's what's inside the uniform that counts. I just don't know why we're doing this. I'll tell you what's happened is Spurrier. I remember Spurrier saying sometime this summer, "Yeah, we're going to wear some alternative uniforms this year, but it's not going to be in a big game." Do y'all remember him saying that?
Yeah, he said that.
He said that. So it's like Wofford or whatever. But there's a clause somewhere in that Under Armour contract that says you got to wear this stuff that we provide you, these crazy ass uniforms, you know, on a ESPN, you know, night game or a CBS 330 game or so. There's something in there that says, because I don't think Spurrier would do this.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I wouldn't even sweat it too much. The jerseys are kind of cool, you know, but those camo pants, man. Yeah. I mean, even the players are tweeting out today, do we have to wear the camo pants?
Yeah, the jerseys do actually look pretty good. But anyway, we could wear pink for breast cancer research. I don't care. It really doesn't bother me. I'm not really superstitious, even though I keep purposely picking us to lose and we keep winning. And even though I've never stepped on the first baseline or the third baseline as long as I've lived, you know, Demetra tweeted out the company line. He said, well, you know, we beat number one ranked Kentucky in basketball with gray uniforms, and we won the national championship in baseball with gray uniforms. And I just wanted to say, shut up. Just shut up.
Insert the Demetra tweet here. Our response is, shut up.
Win anyway, Demetra. Win anyway. Yeah, and they're the battle grays. Battle.
I'm glad this is a family show. Thinking back to the every day should be Saturday quote about the infield flower.
Oh, my God. That was the fun. O-S-T-F-U. That was a great, you know, and that.
Tweet of the year, by the way.
People need to, I'm about to go on a rant here. People need to lighten up. People need to lighten up. And I've lived in Atlanta for 15 years. I've been an Atlanta sports fan my entire life. And when beer bottles and hot dogs and stuff came raining down on Turner Field on Friday night, I was kind of like, yeah, we're showing these guys, you know, because all these years, all I've heard was how passive Atlanta fans are, how we don't show up and we don't care and we don't do this and we don't do that. And then Twitter fills up with everybody in the world thinking they're clever saying, stay classy, Atlanta. You know, it's like, shut up too. You know, don't tell us that we should have more passion and then tell us not to throw crap on the field. All right. That's our way of showing passion.
Yeah, all 12,000 people in the stadium threw something on the field. It's fine.
Yeah. And it's kind of like the overrated chant thing that I blogged on today. People got so upset about, oh, you're diminishing your victory by chanting overrated to the, who cares? What we're doing is we're pouring, there's a big open wound that the Georgia fans have, and chanting overrated is like a big barrel of salt that we're pouring into it, you know?
Absolutely.
That's what that's about.
That wound has been exposed for how many years?
Yeah.
Like 30?
Right.
And so, I think we were due for a little aggression at the Bulldogs.
And it's like, you know,
endured my share of it in Sanford Stadium over the years.
And you know, the people voting in the polls aren't sitting at home going, wait, are they chanting overrated? Is Georgia? Maybe Georgia is overrated. Well, we're not going to rank South Carolina as high if they're going to chant that, you know. Yeah. Anyway, so that's a. Let's move on to.
I don't know. I like to see this vinegar side of your personality. You don't get a lot of this. Sunshine guy over there.
I'm going to get to the vinegar side of your personality by talking about.
This week in Dabo.
So, Dabo and the Clemson Tigers beat Georgia Tech 47-31, was it? I think it was.
Who knows? Who cares?
It was a two-score victory, and it was, again, in doubt into the fourth quarter. How miserable a week, T-Bone, has this got to be for Clemson fans, knowing that we have ascended to third in the country. We had this great national exposure on Saturday night. We had 4,000 recruits at the game, and everybody is patting us on the back. You know, what is it like in the upstate this week?
Well, I wish I could tell you. Nobody up here follows sport anymore. Everybody's
they stopped.
I don't know. It's turkey season or something. They've all quietly forgotten about it. But seriously, no. I turned on the radio Monday morning on the way to work, and the intro. I am not even going to exaggerate. They talked about two titans with football tradition galore. One from South Carolina, one from Georgia, meeting in a nationally important game. In the end, the team from South Carolina won, and of course they were talking about Georgia Tech.
And right. Clubs,
which is just ridiculous. But let me say this. I think I have an insight into the way these people think. They're all scared to death right now because they think they're Georgia. All along in their mind, they've thought, you know, we have this great rivalry with Georgia. You talk to any Clemson fan, oh, that's our big rival, Georgia. You know, they hadn't played in 10 years, but that's their big rival. I think in their minds, that's where they fit in the college football world. They're Georgia. And the reality is when they saw us do that to Georgia, it's got them all scared. I mean, uniformly, I was getting texts and emails and phone calls ever since. About how, oh, y'all are going to kill us. Y'all are going to kill us. So, I don't know.
Let this sink in, a little bit off topic, but let this sink in, everybody out there listening, all 12 of you. Three in a row versus Clemson, three in a row versus Georgia. Can you believe that?
No, that's – no, and then the streak in the East. What's the SEC East streak up to now?
I don't know.
I mean, however many since Kentucky in 2010. I don't know.
Right.
Is it 20 games?
No, it's not that.
No, it's like 9 or 10.
Yeah.
No, it's more than that.
Well, you know.
No, okay. It's just the East. You know, you're right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've got a computer in front of me, but look at that. We're running out of time. So on next week's show, we'll tell you what that streak is at. Another thing, this Robert Kimdiche kid. With his non-committal commitment to Clemson. Again, this week says he's 100% committed to Clemson, but, you know, things can happen.
I think I dated him.
So, you know, his mom says she doesn't want him to go to Clemson. And he says he, you know, his part of his heart is really at Ole Miss with his brother or something like this. Oh my gosh, I long for the day when he bails out on Clemson. I mean, they might just tear down Tillman Hall if that happens.
Can you say Devontae Hallman? Can you say Craig Lawson? Two guys who could be playing on Saturday night.
Right.
In another Death Valley.
Right.
I mean, that would be just absolute euphoria if he pulled that on them. I'll tell you what, that would be great.
Yeah, well, Clemson, if we're 11-0 and they're 10-1, they'll be the most miserable 10-1 fan base of all time. So, anyway.
They're furious with this defensive situation, too, by the way. They feel like they bought the premier, and this is, I'm going to use their language, the premier defensive coordinator in the nation. And they paid a premium for him and stole him away from Oklahoma.
Right.
And I think if you ask Oklahoma people, they'll say, yeah, we held the door open as he carried his boxes out. But they are really frustrated with this. They're really frustrated with this defensive situation. And they're now to the whole point, and this is like one of the stages of grief or something, I don't know, but they're to the point now where it's, we have a problem, we know we have a problem, but it's not coaching. It's that our older players are not our best players.
Oh.
Makes sense, right?
So that's it. So the young guys are going to come along in the next 2 or 3 years. And
right. Or any minute.
Yeah.
Is, I think, the way where they're looking at it. Any minute that's going to happen.
Sammy's not having a great year either. And there seems to be some worry that something's wrong with Sammy Watkins. I don't know.
Well, there was a little bit of a rumor that he had a little abdominal virus, took a gift from an agent bug here last week.
Was it? It was either that or one of those Rod Stewart situations, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. I
think, you know what I think it's called? I think it's called double team.
Right. Yeah. That's why Nuke Hopkins is now their next NFL superstar.
And I think that when we play them, there's going to be two people on Sammy.
Yeah. So tell us about, G-Man, tell us about Justin Mackey. Chose South Carolina over Wichita State and somebody else.
Like Murray State.
Murray State, yeah.
Well, real quickly, 6'3", 6'4", guard out of Irmo High School. Sound familiar? Even though BJ was probably 6'1", 6'2". But
yeah.
I mean, obviously a legacy recruit. BJ, one of my all-time favorite Gamecocks in any sport. And we hope this guy's a late bloomer. I don't think we'd be signing him just because he's BJ's son. There's a word out there that he's not through growing. They expect him to end up being 6'5", 6'6". And I think you're going to see him redshirt while he goes into his body, maybe develops a little bit. And, you know, I got high hopes for the kid. I mean, I don't think they'd have signed him if they didn't think he could play. And we certainly know what kind of grit and determination BJ had, one of the best ever.
You say he's not through growing yet. How could he be through growing? What is he, 12 years old? How does BJ Mackey have a college-bound kid already?
He was there during those years. I remember.
Yeah.
He was already playing AAU ball when Mackey was playing here.
It's like, didn't Rasheed Wallace have a kid when he was like 13 or 14?
I don't know.
I need to look that up. That yeah, he does.
BJ Mackey's son was the old guy smoking behind the bench.
All right. Well, great week for the Gamecocks. Hopefully when we reconvene for the next podcast, we can be talking about another huge win. Unprecedented times, my friends. It's a good time to be a Gamecock. And,
drink it in.
Any final thoughts, anecdotes? Anybody got a good joke or anything before we sign off?
You've already alluded to this. This week is important, but next week against Florida is going to decide, I think, the East, regardless of this outcome. What this outcome this week could do is set the table for something huge.
Right.
But this isn't going to kill us in the SEC race one way or the other.
Yeah. All right, gang, thanks again for joining us. Before we sign off, we'd like to remind you that how many days? It's now been 1,415 days. 1415. Wow. That's 1415 days since South Carolina lost to Clemson in football. I am Buck for the RubberChickensBlog.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at RubberChickens, RubrChickens. Tell your friends, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for joining us.
I'm a road runner, honey. Baby.